The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Good to have you with me. Delighted to have you with me on this. What's the difference between good and delighted? I think good is more of the value judgment. Delighted is a personal expression of emotions, however temporary, maybe perhaps an hour. Delighted to have you with me. And I think it's good to have you with me here on this Look Back Friday. This is where we, as always, take previous callers who brought up some great points. Obviously couldn't get to all of them. I wanted to talk more. I always want to talk more. I'd like to extrapolate on the call. I'd like to broaden it up to maybe a bigger matter. Or sometimes there are things in between the words that the folks say that I would explore, but I can't, because as the person is describing their situation, they move on in another direction. So I can't go back and say, wait a minute, four sentences ago you said this. I want to explore that for a little bit. No, you can't do that. That's something for therapy in an office. However, sometimes I can add, and that's what Look Back Friday's for. So we shall get to that shortly. I forget what grade I was in. Maybe fifth, sixth. I was taking what they called at the time CCD, Confraternity of Christian Doctrine, at St. Anthony's Parish in Canton, Ohio, the parish of Mother Angelica. She was long gone when I was there, but she might have been over at the monastery. I asked Sister, might have been Sister Nancy, what would happen if someone has been a faithful Catholic Christian all their lives? Now, it would have to be a Catholic, because the Catholic theology is the one that follows this vein of thinking. Many of the Christian theologies and doctrines do not. If someone has been a faithful Catholic all of his life, and then, at some point, commits a serious sin and dies, would that wipe out pretty much everything that he'd done up to that point? And I said, it didn't seem fair. Didn't seem fair. His choices for God all stacked up in one direction, and then he made this one really bad move that jeopardized his soul. Now, Sister gave me a pretty good answer. She said, the more one lives for Christ, the less likely they are to make a decision like that. Because your predisposition, your inclination, your trajectory of your life is heading in the direction of Christ. So it's less likely. But I want to extrapolate from that. I don't know. Let's say that I would visit a prison. I would take 10 guys at random who have been incarcerated for a violent offense. I would interview them about their offense. I would ask the specifics, the details. I would ask them how long it took them to commit that offense for which they've been in prison or going to be in prison for 8 years, 12 years, 15 years, life, whatever. How long did it take them to commit that offense? Yeah, and I would imagine that the answers would be on the order of minutes. Not likely that, for example, somebody kidnapped someone and kept them for 7 days. For the most part, violent acting out is relatively short-lived. Okay. Now let's make another assumption. Let's assume that by and large, they didn't do much of that otherwise. Say this was a 23-year-old kid. He'd had a number of minor offenses, some brushes with the law, but he'd never really hurt anybody. Maybe a breaking and entering, some theft. But this final offense, this one here, this was the big one. And because of it, he was sent to prison. Not county jail, prison. For X years. Well, there's a parallel here. The parallel is to the guy that's somewhat lived his life well for Christ within the realm of being a sinner and then committed the big sin and jeopardized his soul. The guy in jail, for the most part, never really hurt anybody physically. Yeah, my dad's gotten some fights when he was adolescent or teenager, maybe young adult, maybe in a bar scene, he punched somebody. But this offense that he did was the most serious by far of what he did. And it took 4.62 minutes. Doesn't seem fair, does it? 99.99% of the time, he was okay. He didn't do anything wrong. The Catholic Church has always taught that you can commit a grave wrong. You can, through it, turn away from the faith. No matter how much time you have otherwise spent in the faith. I hear this from parents. They will say, and we've teased about this on the program, the obligatory, overall, he's a pretty good kid. I get that in my office all the time. I'm giving you the wrong impression. He's a good kid. Overall, he's a good kid. Or they'll say to me, well, he's not bad all the time. As a matter of fact, most of the time, he's cooperative. What's he like when he's not cooperative? Oh, my. He curses. He breaks things. He throws fits. He has major league fits. Well, would you say that 90%+ of the time he doesn't do that? Yeah, probably not. Well, then what are you complaining about? He's 90% of the time okay. But you see, it is that 2% or that 4% or that 6% of that kind of conduct that causes the problem. Parents routinely will come in my office and describe a kid who gets in absolutely no trouble at school. All right, so there's 40 hours a week. The other, 7 times 8 is 56. The other 56 to 60 hours a week, he's sleeping. All right, now we're up over getting close to 100 hours a week. That leaves 68 hours of wake time. Of that 68 hours, perhaps no more than an hour or two is spent in overt defiance or nastiness or physical assault or disrespect. Okay. Is it fair then to say, well, overall he's pretty good, so the rest of this time I don't know why I'm getting upset. I mean, I just sort of have to endure it. It's not all the time. Of course not. Someone who mistreats you badly. How long did it take him to mistreat you? A minute and a half? 2 minutes? The rest of the time at that family gathering, there was no problem whatsoever. He avoided you, or the few times he talked to you, he was reasonably civil. But then something happened. You got into a discussion of some type, and he got mad. And he berated you in front of everybody. And then he stormed off. Berating?
1.62 minutes. At most. Well, you see my point? The point is not, is someone good on balance? Because most people don't misbehave on balance. On balance, they are either appropriate, civil, maybe kind, perhaps lovable, on balance. But that's not how we deal with human conduct. We deal with the seriousness or the intensity, the nastiness of the behavior that occurs 3.5% of the time. The vast majority of parents who come to my office are not telling me that for each and every waking minute, this kid's a problem. They're not telling me that. They're telling me that if he gets crossed, or if he's denied, or if he's thwarted, he will act up. But if you don't do that, then he'll go long stretches without any complications. But you see, it is that one piece of behavior, that one time that he kicked a hole in the wall, or that one time that he threw a major league fit because you took his phone. That's still serious stuff. And the church even views that kind of minority time interval behavior as serious stuff. Goes all the way back to the question of, well, gee, it doesn't seem fair that if a guy's lived 99.99% of his life, and then when he's 66 years old, he has an adulterous relationship one time on his wife. Well, come on, doesn't he get a little credit for all those other good times? No, because what he did was very, very, very wrong. So, I guess you judge it not by what is on balance good or appropriate in conduct. You judge it by the intensity of the misconduct. When we come back, Heather from Canada has a son. Now, initially, this is what happens. There is a spike misbehavior. In other words, there's something that throws the parent for a loop. And then as you explore this, it wasn't an isolated piece of misconduct. It fit in a little bit with what was coming on as an overall style. I'm Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray has more great advice soon. Don't go anywhere.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Ciao, Sorelli and Fratelli, sisters and brothers. Teresa Tomio here from Catholic Connection. Through the years, so many of you have contacted me asking for my advice on traveling to my favorite place in the world, Italy. Being that I've had the blessing of visiting the country more than 50 times now, I've decided to respond to those special requests by introducing Tease Italy at TravelItalyExpert.com, a website for all things Italia where you'll receive insider tips on where to eat, stay, shop, play, and most importantly, pray. At TravelItalyExpert.com, you'll discover, with the help of our key partners, Ave Maria Radio and Corporate Travel, this beautiful Catholic country through videos, blogs, and even personal travel consulting. So whether you're planning that upcoming visit or just want to learn more about Italy, connect with me on TravelItalyExpert.com. Ciao for now. We'll see you online at Tease Italy, TravelItalyExpert.com.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Doesn't that sound like one of those 70s cop shows? Mannix.
Well, that is a manly kind of name, isn't it? He couldn't get away with that now. It'd have to be Personix. Or Magnum. Magnum P.I. Again, another one of these. They pick these names, you know. Magnum P.I. Who was the guy, Andrew, that Andy Griffith played as the lawyer? I forget the lawyer. Of course, I think the manliest guy was Matlock. That's it. Another one. Did you notice that? All M's. I think there's something subliminal about that M-A. Maddox, Matlock, Magnum. But I think the most manly dude, and I think it's because he's Italian, was Columbo. Loved Columbo. Dr. Ray Guarendi, this is Look Back Friday. Let's take the question from Heather in Canada. She found something that shook her up. And as we talked, well, it just wasn't an isolated thing. He was vaping on a school trip, suspended, initially bugged, but then he became nasty about it, right?
Yes. So I guess my response to him was not what he needed at the moment. So he quickly turned that into anger at me throughout the evening.
What did you do wrong?
Well, he won't articulate it, but on reflection last night, I think it's that I wasn't compassionate about it because he was upset to the point of crying about his mistake. And I was pressing for, you know, have you done this before? And who were you with? And
which is smart parenting, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought, too, until I got this response. And so it ended in me removing the Wi-Fi because, well, I just thought that was the right thing to do. And then it escalated later in the evening, and I asked for his car keys. And so now he doesn't have access to his car. And I guess, you know, I was just reflecting and thinking that perhaps I was maybe not as compassionate as I could have been. And I'm thinking of going to him and apologizing for that, but standing firm on the punishments and saying, you know, I'm taking the car for a day when you give me the keys, because he didn't end up giving me the keys. We had to...
Whoa, wait a minute. Weather, help me out. He refused to give you those keys? You said, give me the keys, and he said no?
That's true.
Oh! What do you think about that?
Well, I wasn't happy about it, but other than wrestling it from his clutches, I didn't know what else to do.
Are you married?
Yes.
And your husband?
Stepdad in the house, and he does have a real dad.
So stepdad didn't step in and say, what did your mother say?
He did, and he had the same response.
Heather, you're not going to like what I'm going to say here, dear.
It's okay. I'm ready for
First of all, I don't think you need to feel... This is the part you'll like. I don't think you need to feel guilty at all about the fact that you didn't show the proper amount of compassion that your son thinks you should have shown. Okay? I think you were very rightfully distraught as a parent finding out that he did this, and you really wanted to get some details. Very, very fair. Here's the part you won't like. It makes me nervous that your son outright defied you regarding the car keys and that he became so belligerent, which tells me there is more you need to explore about what he's doing.
Okay.
The vaping is probably not the first. I would say it's very likely not the first.
He said so.
Second, pardon?
He did admit to that.
Okay. And then, also, the fact that he just defiantly said, no, you're not getting the keys. Oh, my. If I were the parent, in my mind, that would have severely escalated the problem. Severely. It's one thing to misbehave, get caught, be held accountable. It's quite another to defiantly say, you can't hold me accountable. Who do you think you are? Which is, I think, what happened. So you got to decide what you want to do about that. The fact that he's this mad tells me he's thinking you have no right to take my Wi-Fi. You have no right to take my car. Is that the sense you're getting from his mood and tone? Yeah, I would think so. I think I would sit down with your present husband and with his dad and get on the same page if you can and say, what are we going to do about this? We got a problem here. And it's come to light that there may be stuff that we better look further into with him. That'd be my suggestion. How old is he?
17.
Son. Is he a senior?
Yes.
Okay. You might have to look into who he's hanging around with. It's like this, Heather. When parents say, my kid has done something that is very surprising to me, and I am not sure what my response to it should be. Oftentimes, the more critical question is not, what is my discipline consequence? The question is, do I need to reassess his moral trustworthiness? Which means, of course, that across the board, you have to look at his level of freedoms, who he hangs with, his supervision, where he's allowed to go on his phone, all of that. Because he's kind of shown you, I've broken your trust. I can't be trusted to act not only responsibly, but not in a self-destructive way. I try as best I can to listen to how people put things, what they're saying by what they're saying. Heather had a couple of illusions. She said, I responded to him, but I don't think it was what he needed at the moment. Then she said, I was not as compassionate as I could have been. Then she said, he was upset to the point of crying. Okay. The implication is, first of all, that she didn't have the right to get that upset. Of course she did. Of course she did. As a parent, when you get upset over something your kid does, and you're not generally an upset-like parent, you're making a statement. You did something pretty bad here. My dad used to be that way. When he got upset, I knew I crossed the line. And the pop was getting real mad. Uh-oh. First thing. Secondly, she said he was upset to the point of crying. The implication was, gee, he felt so bad. If he felt so bad, why didn't he just give her the keys? No, I think he was upset to the point of crying because he got caught. We don't like to think that as parents. Think about this. He admitted it was not his first time. So when a kid admits it's not his first time, it ain't his second time, that's for sure. It's a pattern. Who's he been hanging with? That's the question Heather has to ask. I think I heard her say, and it happened very quickly, let's go take the car for a day. Take the car for a day? I didn't say this in the call. If it were me, and you refused to give me those keys, first of all, you got yourself in a heap of trouble. I don't know when you're getting the car now. Don't ever refuse to hand me those keys. Oh, but Dr. A, he'll just take the car. Ooh. Now that's even worse. If it were me, I'd call the cops. He took my car. Stole my car. I did that to one of my sons when he was 18. He took my car without permission. Yipper, he got himself in a major league bunch of trouble. What is going unspoken here? And all too often, I don't have time for this. Let me deal with this just after the break, and then we'll go to another look back call. But there's something that is unspoken in many of my calls. I do not have time to pursue it in the call, but it's something that I would pursue if someone were in therapy with me to find out what that is.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
In the church, we speak of seven gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, knowledge, loyalty, courage, and reverence or fear of the Lord. When I speak about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and these gifts come, they give you the ability to go beyond your strength. If you're struggling to be a good person, a good member of your religion, you know it's a struggle and you don't always make it. I've been at it many, many decades, and I still struggle and trip and fall and have holes in my socks. Struggling to be a good person, something that we need help at. And this help comes to us by these gifts of the Holy Spirit.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
We were made for spiritual greatness. The divine image is in every person, however dimly seen in some. God gave man a spiritual and immortal soul. From the first moment in the womb, he or she is destined for eternal life with God. Man, by his reasoning, is capable of understanding the order the Creator has established. By our will, we are capable of aligning ourselves with our true good, which is where we find our perfection. Reason provides recognition of God's voice directing us toward good and avoiding evil. The law of God is made known by our conscience and is fulfilled by the love of God and love of neighbor. Because our first parents sinned, we suffer the wound of original sin. Thus, while we still desire good, we are inclined toward evil and subject to error. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Ready here on Look Back Friday. Can't turn my neck as far as I used to. A little more stiff these days. I don't know if it's because of all those years of lifting or not. You wonder, my brother and I have often wrestled with this. I've lifted for probably, started when I was in college, so many decades. And he's lifted. He's a lot younger than I am, but he's also lifted for about 30, 35 years. And we've often debated, with the tweaks and the pains and the small muscle pulls and everything else that you get when you lift heavy. And by the way, I don't have to lift as much weight to lift heavy anymore. Is it worth it, or would you have been better off not to have those tweaks and aches and pains if you didn't lift? And we've concluded it's better to lift. It's better to lift overall. Does an awful lot of good stuff for you. And I recommend it highly to you ladies. Highly. Women benefit greatly from strength training, strength resistance. Changes everything. Changes how easy you can get up from chairs, get out of cars. Changes how easily you can pick up something, how easy you can go up steps. Major, major difference. And I will tell you this. If you lifted strength training, you just use the machines, twice a week, within 6 weeks, you will have at least doubled your strength. It's true. Okay, I wanted to get into a little bit. Heather called in, and she was talking about what she wasn't to do with her defiant son, who she caught vaping, and she was talking about what things she was going to take. The unspoken in so many of these calls, about 70% of my calls are from women. And I would say of that, the bulk is wives or mothers. The unspoken is, where's dad? Now, I don't have enough time to ask every caller, okay, what's your husband say about this? However, typically the women will say, this is what I did. I put this consequence on him. I disciplined him this way. I restricted him. Not we. Or my husband restricted him. Much of the time, it is the woman making the authority move. I think part of that, now again,
because I didn't pursue it doesn't mean that the husband wasn't on the same page with the wife. But I think part of that is in our culture now, men have really abdicated so much of their authority. Let the women do it. That's right. Easy for us. Whereas even a couple generations ago in our culture, guys were definitely the authority figures. Not so much anymore. And maybe someday that'll be a nice monologue to talk about on how that transition has taken place. We have an anonymous caller, female, from Missouri. She's doing something that hurts her marriage, but it's charitable.
I've been married less than a year, and I have three sisters. Two of them have been in really bad situations, and I've bailed them out with my husband's help. And I have a third sister who's graduating from college, and she wants to come live with us after so she can, you know, keep living costs down and pay off her student loans quickly. And I'm just, like, so beaten down by my other two sisters that my third sister, I really want to help her out, but it's causing a wedge between me and my husband because he's tired of helping out my other sisters, and he doesn't want, like, the only thing we fight about is my family. So I don't know how to balance, how do I help my family but not drive this wedge between me and my husband? And I'm also, like, scared to help my family because of what I've been through in the past with them. My husband does not want to help her.
Why do you think you have to let her live with you?
I was in the same situation when I graduated from college, and I didn't have the chance or the opportunity to pay off my student loans quickly because I had to live on my own. So I kind of want to give that chance to her, but my husband doesn't want it, and then I just feel extremely guilty for not allowing her to.
Is your husband a bad guy? Is he somebody that you say, oh boy, I really regret marrying this guy because he's just unreasonable and he's unpleasant, and that's all of that?
No.
Is that,
no,
not okay, at all. Then you answered your own question. Because if you have a good husband, a good spouse, who is reasonable and fair-minded and says, I don't think this is a good thing at all and I'm against it, then it would sure seem like you both have to be on the same page for it to happen. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it sounds like, and you tell me if I'm wrong, if you have helped your other sisters a lot and they seem to have taken advantage of it and not appreciated it and indeed kind of freeloaded or whatever they did off of you, and your husband has seen this, you've been burned. He's saying, I think it's time not to be burned anymore. And you're saying, yes, but I feel such an obligation. I feel so guilty. They're my sisters. I got to keep reaching out. I got to keep helping them. You got to ask yourself a question, my dear. Are you helping them by doing that? You may think this is the good thing to do, but you're not helping them. Okay? So
yeah.
You do not, it seems to me, have a Christian obligation to invite your sister, who is an adult, into your home. You don't have any obligation like that.
When my wife wanted to homeschool, at that time, I was involved with the schools. I did a lot of training in the schools, many, many things with the schools, the public schools, parochial schools. She wanted to homeschool. I had memories of my own growing up, elementary years, and all the neat things you can do in a school setting, the school plays and the sports and overall just that aspect of your life that I truly enjoyed. I liked it a lot, and I wanted to share that with the children. At that time, our two oldest were 6 and 5. She wanted to homeschool. I was initially, I don't want to say against it, I was not on board with it. Her attitude was, we have to be on the same page with this. If Ray is not going to be coordinating this with me, then if I want to do this, this is a whole family type decision. Similar to adoption. Any child that we adopted, we had to be both in agreement. At one point,
I wanted to adopt an 11th child. And my wife said to me, if you want to do this, Ray, I'll do it. But I have to tell you, I'm at my load limit. Oh, I said, what a wimp. 10 children under 12? Come on. But I knew that without her on board, this was a decision that had to be made by both. And I think our anonymous caller has to accept that. That her husband, they've only been married a year. He wants the privacy of their marriage so that they can grow to get to know each other. This is an adult sister who has graduated from college. She's perfectly capable of making her own way.
Stopping you from becoming a Catholic.
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
We recently won an important case in federal court in Toledo, Ohio. For too long, city police officers were enforcing local and state laws to prohibit pro-lifers from engaging in free speech activity on the public sidewalks outside of a local abortion center. In our case, the court issued an order prohibiting the city and its police officers from enforcing any local or state law as applied to the expressive activity of pro-life demonstrators, including our clients. This is yet another victory for the First Amendment in a case where a city and its police officers were abusing their authority to silence peaceful pro-life demonstrators to appease those engaged in the baby-killing business. As the court's order demonstrates, the Constitution protects our clients' pro-life activity from such abuse. The government has no authority to silence our clients' speech simply because they are preaching the gospel on a public sidewalk next to an abortion center. Indeed, this victory is yet another blow to the abortion industry, which has too often relied on the government to promote and support its bloody business by silencing those who oppose it. The actions of the city of Toledo and its officers in this case were deplorable, and they violated our clients' fundamental rights. We stop this egregious activity in Toledo, and we intend to stop it wherever it raises its ugly head. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
You throw that in sometimes just to add a little bit of Victorian class. Yow. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thanks for joining me. And whatever that song is, sounds like a waltz, some type of Victorian thing. Delighted to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray in season number 8. We plan to head out to Station of the Cross Radio in Buffalo to shoot 4 more episodes. That would be in August, and closer to the date, we'll give the information for all the folks on that network with Jimmy Wright and all the gang. After that, God willing, we're going to head over to, looks like, Kansas City Catholic Radio Network with Jim O'Loughlin. I think the rule is you have to be Jim to be managing, running, and operating and being the chief executive of a radio station, because Jim Carroll runs the KVSS Spirit Radio Network. That's just Jim's all over the place. All right. This is Look Back Friday. Take some previous calls and discuss them a little further. Kyle, Texas, has a situation that in days past, this really wasn't something that confused parents. They recognized there were certain developmental realities that, for the most part, if they dealt with them straight on, this was something that the child passed through. It wasn't anything that portended an identity problem.
Well, now, because in the last 10, 15, 20 years, our culture has become so sensitive to these matters, the parents get nervous. The parents are prone to question heavily what is going on.
My wife and I have a three-year-old. He just turned three in November, and we noticed that he has a tendency to really gravitate towards things that are more towards, you know, the feminine realm. So like his mother's shoes, or we'll want to take, you know, find one of her pink shirts or a tank top and wear that as if it's kind of a dress. And so I'm just trying to figure out as a father, and her obviously as well, how do we go about trying to enforce, you know, his gender roles and everything at 3 years old? That at what point am I doing damage by trying to correct it? And what type of, or what amount of concern should I have with the behaviors he's displaying?
Not unusually, three-year-old kids have this fluid sense of who they are, gender-wise. And I use the word gender because of their perception. It's not at all unusual for a three-year-old boy to want to wear mommy's things or to take something and say, I'm using lipstick, I'm doing lipstick, kind of thing. Not at all unusual, especially since mommies are still kind of a main caretaker, even in our culture where women work a lot outside the home. So that's not at all unusual. Secondly, you can easily say things like, oh, no, 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 you wear boy clothes. You're a boy, so these are the clothes you wear like daddy wears. You're allowed to do that. There is a streak in our culture that says, oh, no, 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 you don't do that. If that child wants to be whatever he wishes to be gender-wise, you allow it. Never before in human history has that been. And the vast majority of three-year-old boys will take on the identity of their father, a male. That's what will happen. However, if you allow that kind of early on fuzziness regarding gender roles, it can continue on. So you're doing nothing wrong early on to emphasize, yeah, this is what little boys wear, and he spends more time with daddy in traditional daddy male pursuits. My son, my oldest son, Andrew, when he was three, we got him a tool set. And he took these tools and he used them as lipstick. He said, this is lipstick, and I'm going to put lipstick on like that. And my wife said, no, Andrew, that's not lipstick. That is a screwdriver, okay? And this is how you use a screwdriver, that kind of thing. We didn't have, this was 30 years ago, 28, 25 years ago. We didn't have these kinds of gender nervous concerns regarding guiding a little boy towards where he is. Interesting little study, American Academy of Pediatrics, and they get kind of abused by some of the more dominant mindsets out there. But they have said that the vast majority of kids, even in the teen years, who evidence gender confusion end up with their sexual identity as it is biologically. Unfortunately, we have a culture that says if you have any confusion whatsoever, that automatically means you can't know who you are sexually. Well, first thing I got to do is correct that. It was the American College of Pediatricians. All right. American Academy is much, much more in line with the prevailing ideology regarding gender identity matters. First thing. Did you hear what Kyle said? It was early on in his question. At what point am I doing damage? You see, he's skittish about the idea that if he doesn't allow, if he doesn't fuel, if he doesn't celebrate this little three-year-old's developmental inclination at that point, however temporary, that he could in fact cause problems for his son, because his son has a natural bent toward that which is feminine as part of his sexual identity, and dad is creating more problems
by and large, that's affecting more parents. They're nervous, especially in this whole developmental realm where there is. Even, you know, Freud even talked about this. Old granddaddy of psychiatry, Sigmund Freud. He called it the latency period, which is partly where the child kind of doesn't really identify so much with necessarily either sex. It's kind of, Freud had what he called psychosexual stages, and they were marked by certain types of development, certain tractions, oral, anal, phallic stage, those kinds of things. But there was a latency stage where the sexual identity was on a back burner, so to speak. See, Freud recognized that, and then most developmental psychologists will tell you, yes, there is that kind of identity in, for example, young boys who are predominantly raised by mom. They identify with mom. But as time passes, and as perhaps they spend more time with dad, that identification shifts to maleness. So I think what was happening was Kyle was real nervous about this because he thought it portended something for the future. Not necessarily at all. Okay, when we come back, I don't know if we'll have time. If we don't, I will do a little commentary on something. Probably have several minutes when we come back, and the look back call up there is about 4.5 minutes. We'll see.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org. Hi, everybody. Dr. A here. Well, being a grandparent's just like being a parent, isn't it? Only different here. I have a book with that same title. And in that book, I take on the ups and the downs of being grandparents. It's a second go around with the kids, in a way that mirrors God's own unconditional love for us. You can get the book and my many others at AveMariaRadio.net. Good to be with you. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is The Doctor Is In. This is also Look Back Friday, but I won't be doing any more looking back, because as I look at the clock here, we've got a segment of about 5 or so minutes, and the look back call is about 4.5. So we'll save it for another day. Often what I do is look at C.S. Lewis, Clives Staples Lewis. He wrote a book called Miracles. Here's what he said. Miracles, in fact, are a retelling in small letters of the very same story, which is written across the whole world in letters too large for some of us to see. Let me say that again. Miracles, in fact, are a retelling in small letters of the very same story, which is written across the whole world in letters too large for some of us to see. I attended a conference, or I listened to Father Robert Spitzer, brilliant man, scientist, physicist, apologist for the Catholic faith. He gave a talk that I want to get a hold of and dispense to many, called Nine Proofs, I believe, for God. And in it, he talked about some pretty spectacular miracles, some healings at Lourdes, mind-boggling types of healings, not your basic, I had a sore back and I feel better. Mm-mm. Growing back of a limb, that's pretty hard to call psychosomatic. And of course, he talked about the shroud. And I believe he addressed the tilma. Now, those to Lewis, and I don't even know if Lewis was familiar with that stuff. That's predominantly in the Catholic world, and many of my evangelical friends, when I talk to them about this, they know nothing about it, nothing at all. They know nothing about the Eucharistic miracles. They know nothing about incorruptibles, and they're stunned when they see these things. Interestingly enough, it doesn't necessarily draw them closer to the Catholic faith. It might convince them that maybe the Catholic faith is a Christian faith. Well, those are the small letters, miracles. The large letter miracle, the one that Lewis is referring to, is Christ. The incomprehensible miracle of God, the creator of the universe, the whole shebang, becoming one of us. Lewis said, that's a story. And he doesn't mean story like a fictitious story. It means something, a narrative that is told, that is written across the whole world. Okay? Much of the world knows the story of Christ. But then he says the sad thing. Too large for some of us to see. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he was talking about how he really is interested in the Norse gods. Likes to explore their ideas about morality. And he equated this whole idea of various cultural gods, very historical kind of pagan deities as just a variation, perhaps, on Christianity. Yeah, you know, they got their gods, we got our God, you know. It's all just kind of a mishmash. They all pretty much say the same thing. I broached it with him a little bit. I said, well, Thor, or Woden, they don't exist. They were myth. We have absolutely no proof whatsoever that they exist. On the other hand, Christ is a historical figure, and we have plenty of evidence that he existed. Now, who was he? That's the question. And it amazes me how so many people will spend time exploring other forms of, if you want to call them religions or quasi-religions, whatever they are, belief systems of some type. They'll spend a lot of time exploring those, but to look into the powerful evidence, the logic behind Christ and who he said he was and why he was who he said he was. They haven't looked into any of that. They know nothing about it. Nothing. Minimum what the Gospels even say. More likely to put faith in the gods of the Romans or Zeus of the Greeks. Woden of the Norse than Christ. Why? Well, because Woden doesn't demand anything of you. Christ owns you. But you want to be owned. Who wouldn't want to be owned by somebody like that? Who wouldn't want to have a relationship with somebody like that? But I'm fascinated by how people pursue all kinds of beliefs. But the one belief that really has eternal implications for their soul, they spend very little time looking at. A story written across the whole world in letters too large for some of us to see. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permitting, I'll see you Monday on ePerson Monday. Till then, always walk with God. Hold your children nice and tight by their hands.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.